You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, hump day, January 11th. My pleasure to be with you. My mom's birthday tomorrow. Can't forget to call her, for sure. So if I forget, please remind me. My pleasure to be with you. I'll be joined at the bottom of the hour, hopefully. Have not got any texts or anything, so hopefully sickness has abated at the Allday household. Expecting my friend Dr. Allen Allday, professor at the University of Kentucky and certified behavior analyst. He's been a regular guest on the program, though it's been a little while with the holidays and everything, but he's going to be on to talk about parenting one day at a time, sweet Jesus. That was an old country song back from the 70s or 80s, so I'm going to be interested to see where he goes with that. Of course, as Alan will tell you, he's not a therapist. He's not a psychologist. He deals in the realm of behavior and quite successfully. He actually does a lot of work in schools, in classrooms, and with families in really analyzing and talking about how behaviors within these systems impact each other. And sometimes when we talk about a child's behavior, which, you know, there are limits to the degree that we can control it, but we can control our own behavior, and that can make a big difference. So we'll have Alan on here at the bottom of the hour. Alan, who is, along with his lovely wife, Carrie, they're expecting their third child any day. So really appreciate him taking time to be here with us. So we'll talk about that. Also want to talk about Dylann Roof today. Dylann Roof yesterday, the jury that found him guilty, recommended a death sentence for young Dylann Roof. Roof, who is 22 years old. And, of course, infamous for the Charleston church shooting, a particularly heinous crime, motivated by his own admission by racist ideology, in which he shot and killed nine people in cold blood during a prayer service at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church. He killed nine African Americans, including senior pastor and state senator Clementa C. Pinckney, and injured one other person. This was just about a year and a half ago that this happened. So we're going to talk about what, should the judge concur with the jury's recommendation and sentence him to death, what killing Dylann Roof can do and what it can't do. And that'll drive my question of the day, which we'll get into on the other side of the break. Thinking about the atonement and the gospel Jesus preached, we'll, of course, get into some sports news, spin the Dollar Catechism, we'll look back in history and give out our What Were You Thinking nominations and awards, all coming at you today. If you want to be on the program, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. I hope you had a good day since I left you yesterday. Mine was fairly typically routine into the office at the diocese, bolting over to teach my one class at the Catholic high school. And then last night I got to watch a little basketball, my University of Kentucky playing Vanderbilt in a much too close for comfort game, but they did prevail. And also got my thoughts together for today. So that was my day. Pretty dull, actually. But good. Dull is sometimes good, believe me. My son's now got 2 days down at his new job at Wendy's, so that's going well. So thanks for all your prayers. Appreciate that. Anyway, like I said, if you want to be a part of the show, 573-4BREAD-4, call or text. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or Twitter. There's also some news about Donald Trump and the Russians and intelligence agencies and all the rest that we'll probably get to a little bit today, too, because David French, writing in the National Review, talking about how all of it, no matter which way you slice it, is a little bit disturbing. So we'll get into all that. Oh, I am looking forward later today, and I'll talk about this later in the show. Got invited, a good friend of mine that I went to seminary with during my Methodist days when I was going to Asbury Theological Seminary, which is just down the road from where we broadcast from in the lovely little hamlet of Wilmore, Kentucky, that we fondly call the Holy City, Asbury Theological Seminary. It's tucked down there with Asbury University. Technically an independent school, but strong Wesleyan roots. When I say Wesleyan, that's connected with John Wesley, one of the pioneers of the Methodist movement. But anyway, a friend of mine who I went to seminary with, whose dad used to teach at Asbury Seminary, may still teach, his dad may, but my friend is now a professor there. And he's invited me to come down. He teaches a January intensive and asked me to come down to answer some questions about Catholicism with his class. So that should be interesting. I have, of course, a great love for Asbury Seminary. As I often say, many of the things that I love about Asbury Seminary are the same things that I love about the Catholic Church. Because as I found my own journey to the Catholic faith to be, it wasn't a cancellation or a usurpation of what I had once believed. It was a consummation and a fulfillment of it. And my experience at Asbury and the love of the scriptures, for example, and personal holiness and all the rest, I still carry with me to this day. But anyway, this is what he asked me to come. He said, he's teaching a class on basic Christian doctrine. He said they follow the Apostles' Creed as their broad outline of topics to cover. My friend writes, one of my hopes for the class is that we'll come away with an appreciation for a broad mere orthodoxy, which is sort of a reference to C.S. Lewis' book, Mere Christianity. If you've ever read that book, Lewis, who was an Anglican Christian, talked about how Christianity can be envisioned as sort of a hallway off of which are numerous doors. And yes, the rooms to which these doors lead are your various Christian camps, each with their own particular theologies and emphases and all the rest, but that there is a place, that interior hallway, in which we all share common convictions. And so that's what he called mere Christianity. And my friend using it as a phrase for mere orthodoxy. As he said, that's one of the hopes. And I'll explain a little bit later why, in my opinion, mere Christianity or mere orthodoxy is, it's a nice concept, but in the end, it's really not very workable. Anyway, he said the distinction between orthodoxy, he wants to appreciate the distinction between orthodoxy and non-orthodoxy, but also to appreciate some of the legitimate ranges of views within orthodoxy. And he said, we cover topics having to do with Mary, with heaven, hell, purgatory, and I wonder if you might be free sometime for a Q&A for the students on these kind of topics. So I'm going to be going down there. One of the things they want to talk about besides, you know, the Marian dogmas, her perpetual virginity, her immaculate conception, assumption, and so forth. He said other questions, how the church navigates the issues of church discipline, my understanding of the relationship between scripture and tradition, the idea of praying through the saints and asking them to pray for us, discussions of models of the atonement in your tradition, reasons for thinking seriously about purgatory, what's at stake in setting conditions for receiving the Eucharist, and how best to frame discussions involving sexuality and a theology of the body. Wow! Of course, they just did Asbury last year, had Christopher West, Catholic speaker, come in to talk about the theology of the body. So it should be fun. I don't know that we can do that all those topics in one day, but I really look forward to it. I'm honored to be asked. I have sort of thrown a phone-a-friend option out to my buddy, Father Frank Brauner, who you've heard on the program before, one of my best friends. He's hopefully going to be able to change some things in his schedule to go down with me. Love taking a guy in a cassock into Asbury Seminary. That's just me. Anyway, if you've got a question or a comment, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. Interestingly enough, that whole idea of atonement, which is one thing I'm going to talk about a little bit later in the show. How is it that Christ's death reconciles us to the Father? I mean, you've basically got 2,000 years of reflection on that in the Catholic Church, on what that means, why it is that way. Why does the brutal execution of an itinerant Nazarene preacher from 2,000 years ago outside of Jerusalem by a Peniani Roman governor, why does that reconcile all humanity with the Father? We call that atonement, that word that at its etymological root is at-one-ment. How does Christ's death reconcile us to the Father? That's one of the things that they may talk about in my Q&A today. And the first reading actually talks about this from the letter to the Hebrews. Since the children share in blood and flesh, Jesus likewise shared in them that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who through fear of death had been subject to slavery all their life. Surely he did not help angels, but rather the descendants of Abraham. Therefore, he had to become like his brothers and sisters in every way, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest before God to expiate the sins of the people, to atone for, in other words, the sins of the people. Because he himself was tested through what he suffered, he is able to help those who are being tested. So we'll get into this more in the second hour. We come back, our question of the day. It's a tough one. We'll look back in sports and sneak in our What Were You Thinking nominees. This is the Mike Allen Show, and you are listening to Breadbox Media. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show, 15 minutes past the hour here on this Wednesday, the 11th of January. My pleasure to be back with you again in about 15 minutes. Be welcoming Dr. Allen Alday into the program. Always a pleasure to have him in. We'll be talking about behavior and the parenting approach that is, in his words, one day at a time, sweet Jesus. Well, actually, it's the words of a 1980s Christy Lane song, but I digress. Anyway, we'll get him to explain to us. And if you've got a question or a comment, by the way, maybe you have a behavior issue you would like some guidance of, you can either call, be on the air, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you could text me the question. You can remain anonymous if you like. Send me an email, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or post a question on Facebook or on Twitter. Anyway, my question of the day, yesterday, of course, Dylann Roof, the convicted shooter in the Charleston church shooting back from 2015, in which 9 African Americans were killed in cold blood at a Bible study. Dylann Roof, the jury, besides finding him guilty, also recommended death, the death penalty in his case. Now, I guess at this point, it's not confirmed what the judge will do. He can either take that recommendation or he can lessen the punishment. Throughout the whole thing, Dylann Roof, of course, has been unrepentant, said if he had the chance, basically, he would do it again, that he did it for racial reasons. I mean, he's offered really no defense. I think he's been his own attorney. And so my question of the day is, you know, from what I understand, and some of you legal scholars out there can correct me, but before someone can be sentenced to death, I think every juror has to sign the death warrant. And so my question would be, for anybody, let's just say, but particularly for Catholics, would you consider it a sin to sign Dylann Roof's death warrant? That's my question. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. So let's hear, we always spin up the Dollar Catechism wheel, but what does the Catechism of the Catholic Church have to say about the death penalty? This from the 1992 Catechism that was promulgated by Pope St. John Paul II, largely guided by then Cardinal Ratzinger and I believe Cardinal Schönborn of Austria, both of whom, of course, are still around. Anyway, it says this in paragraph 2267, and this is, by the way, has not been without some controversy. Assuming that the guilty party's identity and responsibility have been fully determined, the traditional teaching of the Church does not exclude recourse to the death penalty. If this is the only possible way of effectively defending human lives against the unjust aggressor. If, however, non-lethal means are sufficient to defend and protect people's safety from the aggressor, authority will limit itself to such means as these are more in keeping with the concrete conditions of the common good and more in conformity with the dignity of the human person. Today, in fact, as a consequence of the possibilities which the state has for effectively preventing crime by rendering one who has committed an offense incapable of doing harm, without definitively taking away from him the possibility of redeeming himself, the cases in which the execution of the offender is an absolute necessity are very rare, if not practically non-existent. This last portion or last section of the paragraph, largely drawn from St. John Paul II's encyclical Evangelium Vitae, or otherwise known as the Gospel of Life. And so, of course, there have been those, and certainly very esteemed theologians like Cardinal Avery Dulles, God rest his soul, who wrote, to me, one of the best explanations of church teaching on the death penalty in the Journal on Religion and Public Life called First Things. He did this probably back in the early 2000s, Catholicism and Capital Punishment. I've also seen an article that written by the late Antonin Scalia. And the question is, of course, did this paragraph in the Catechism represent a change in Catholic teaching? Because if you look over the history of the Catholic Church has affirmed that the state does have the authority in some circumstances to put offenders to death. And therefore, the idea that somehow church teaching had completely changed on this, in other words, called something wrong today that it would have called right before, is problematic. And so there have been a lot of discussions about, does this represent a change in Catholic teaching, a development in Catholic teaching, and so forth, because there are whole different ways to look at punishment, and we'll talk about those later in the program. What I really get and sense from the teaching of the Church on this is that we should encourage, whenever possible, mercy. Not mercy in the sense of releasing killers from incarceration. That would be imprudent. But mercy akin to the type of mercy God extended to Cain when the blood of Abel cried out from the ground. Now, I'm not willing to go so far as to say that it would be a sin for a Catholic to sign a death warrant in the case of Dylann Roof. I do think that is probably going to be an issue of conscience, because I don't believe that the Catholic teaching on capital punishment is as definitive and binding in terms of an absolute rejection of the death penalty as it is for some other issues, such as abortion, which the Church has declared to be an intrinsic evil. I think it does show a lack of docility toward the teaching office of the magisterium of the Church to sign the death warrant. But I'm not going so far as to say that it would be a sin. Other of you, I think, disagree and believe it is a sin. Others who've posted on this thread on Facebook. And it's always interesting when you post a question at night and then you go to bed and then you wake up and you see that not only have people commented on the question and at hand, but they've also gotten into a little mini fracases with each other. So you've got little threads of threads going on in the midst of it. And this is a pretty volatile topic. There are those who say, one friend writes, now my friend's not Catholic. He said, if it would be a sin for me to kill him by my own hand, then I'm willing to be a sinner. Another woman says she wishes that we could fry him twice. Others saying, of course, he is made, despite what he's done, he's made in the image and likeness of God, and therefore is worthy of human dignity, and his life is worth preserving. So all kind of different responses on this. If you want to chime in, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Looking into sports, still, you know, Clemson fans living in the afterglow of one of the great finishes in college football history. You know what occurred to me? This has been a year of great championship games. I mean, when you think about, you know, let's go back and start with the NCAA championship game and the amazing win by Villanova over North Carolina at the buzzer. The Super Bowl was compelling in its own way, just the sheer dominant performance from Von Miller. But then let's talk about the World Series, for example. The World Series went seven games, Cubs versus Indians, for heaven's sake. Or let's talk about, before then, the NBA Finals, in which the Warriors were up 3-1 on the Cavaliers. Cleveland desperately parched and thirsty for a championship, coming back led by LeBron James. And now you've got this football championship game that maybe could only be rivaled by the Vince Young, Matt Leinart game back in whatever that was, Texas USC. It's really been a great year for sports championship games. And I do hear some Alabama fans sort of whining out there, saying, oh, there were a couple of pick plays for Clemson. You know, that last touchdown was very clearly a pick. You know, the way I see it, it evens out for the headhunting that Alabama was doing in the first half. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, let's real quick see if we can sneak in a couple of What Were You Thinking nominees. We'll stick in sports for the first nominee, and Alex told me about this when I came in this morning. Grayson Allen, yet again. Now he was, I guess, diving out of bounds and ended up shoving a Florida State assistant coach. Of course, we don't know, making air quotes here, whether he did it intentionally or not. But my goodness, how much smoke has to be around the guy before somebody sees flames? Grayson, control yourself, man. Wow. Will Duke do anything? That's the question. Number two is going to be, let's see, 7-Eleven now serving a breakfast pizza. And I'm sorry, your breakfast pizza is a radical enough idea. My question is, all you out there who eat pizza at convenience stores, really? You see it spinning in that little glass enclosure and you think, got to have me some of that? No hot dogs, no pizza at convenience stores. That's my rule. But the winner, Alabama fan who punches out his TV following the Clemson title game. There's a view image of it online. Nice big flat screen. Renfro scores the touchdown and his fist shatters the screen. Nice move, big boy. Explain that one to your wife. We'll be back with Alan all day. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, January 11th, right at the bottom of the hour. Pleased to have in the studio Dr. Allen Alday. Allen, who is a professor at the University of Kentucky. He's a certified behavior analyst, a regular guest of the program, and coming up on his one-year anniversary of being Catholic. What's the date on that?
The 21st.
21st. Wow.
So, yeah.
That's not the only thing big going on. You got number all day child number three.
Yeah, in 2 days.
In 2 days.
So, yeah, so we're excited. So he'll be our first cradle Catholic. So we'll have to see how he turns out as an adult.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. Thanks.
Couldn't be happier.
Well, we're really excited. It's going to be an exciting time, and just tired, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I bet Solomon and Noah are bouncing off the walls with anticipation.
They're excited now. Let's talk in a couple of weeks,
yeah.
And we'll see how excited they are.
When they don't get all of Mommy's attention.
Exactly. And then, of course, we're going, which I need to talk to you about, going from man-to-man defense to zone defense, because, you know, we don't know how to play zone. Because now we only have two of us.
That's right.
Kids, I need to know.
Well, there's a certain point where you just recognize and admit you've lost control.
Okay, that's
just
good.
Just settle on down into it and just enjoy the ride.
Well, just hold on tight, right?
Hold on tight. That's exactly right.
Well, I think that's what we're going to try to do. So
now, are we allowed to say the name publicly?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's his name will be Luke. Which means the bearer of light, and then his middle name will be Raphael, which means God has healed, so God's medicine. So we're, the names mean a lot to us.
Sure.
And name meanings mean a lot to us. And
your first New Testament name.
Yeah, I know. We're moving, since Catholics don't read the Bible, we figure we'd at least remind them of, but we still have the Old Testament represented.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, with Raphael, that's
exactly right.
From Tobit, so
a book you would not have been familiar with as a Baptist.
That's right. So we're representing both, but we're excited. And
Luke, a good you not only have the angel of healing, you've got the physician Luke, according to tradition. You know, he was a physician. So
right, and his gospel is a gospel of mercy, and so see how all this is going to tie together here. The gospel
nice.
Of mercy. And what did we just end? The year of mercy, in which we joined the church. Where did we go whenever we were still Protestants? We went to Ukraine, and then we went to Poland, and who was in Poland? But, the saint of mercy, Saint Faustina. And so, it's just been, it's just all kinds of interesting things that have happened.
And then when he gets a little bit older and his behavior frustrates you, and all the times you'll say, "Mercy, son, mercy! What are you thinking, flushing that thing down the toilet?"
Exactly. I'll say, "What have you lost your mind?" I like to ask rhetorical questions that they don't have an answer to. So,
there you go. Know. Well, I couldn't be happier for you,
we'll
keep you in our prayers for sure as we approach Friday. You want to talk a little bit today about breaking out the old 1980s Christy Lane song that I used to see advertised on TV, "One Day at a Time, Sweet Jesus."
I always try to come, I know since you're such a fan of country music, I always try to come up with some country music.
Yeah, we had The Gambler, didn't we?
That's right, yeah. I try my best to come up with something that's music themed.
Maybe a good one for you transitioning to three children is Willie Nelson's Whiskey River.
that's a pretty good one, So, excuse me, we might change one up as opposed to sleeping single in a double bed. We might make it sleeping quintuple in a double bed, because I have a feeling that's the way it's going to be for a while. So
there you go.
but I got to thinking about, because now that we're 11 days in to the new year, I wonder how many people have already broken their New Year's resolution. After 11 days. That's why I don't even make them anymore, because it's just a guarantee. You say, I'm going to go and work out every day. And you go and you work out, and you're like, man, my arms are sore. I'm not going to do that anymore. And you go once and paid the $30. And it's a pretty good deal. But I got to thinking about just how we as people, and especially today, we're so much in this fast paced, I want my information yesterday for today. I mean, like we, you know, even going back to dial up, I was sitting in my office yesterday and I was complaining because, you know, I have an Apple in my office, Apple computer, and it's, I got the little beach ball of death, you know, just sitting there and I'm thinking, yeah. Come on, what are you doing? And I was waiting for email to open up. And then I started thinking about back even when I was in college is whenever email first came out. So I think I was a senior in college, the first year we had email, and how slow it took, you know, and it just took forever. And then dial up took forever. And, you know, I still remember the AOL.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You got mail and all this stuff and how long all that took. But now we just get it so fast. And so I got to thinking about that. And although technology has progressed, I think our idea of technology, you know, means that human behavior should be the same. But in reality, we haven't changed. I mean, we're still just us.
We're human beings, yeah. I mean, I always think of that when I read the scriptures and I read like the book of Genesis, I'm thinking cultural circumstances have changed, but human nature, I mean, is the same.
Oh, it is. I mean, we're as much as we like to think we've progressed, we're still the same. I mean, you know, you read back through there, you still have, you know, sibling rivalries. You still have all the stuff, mm-hmm. generational bondage. I mean, you still have all of that stuff that we have to deal with. And so I was thinking about how, you know, for me, there's so many times that I get frustrated with my kids because I'm thinking, I've told you this 450 times. How can you not get it? And I have to step back and realize that it really is one day at a time. You know, it really is looking at things one day at a time. And from a professional standpoint, I mean, we do this all the time. We look at data every day from a professional standpoint, and we make decisions based on the data. So is the behavior getting better? Yes. Okay. Let's keep doing what we're doing. Is the behavior getting worse? Okay. Let's see if it, you know, gets worse for 3 or 4 days in a row. And if it does, okay, we need to perhaps change mm-hmm. something. And when I do this professionally, you know, it makes sense. But on a personal level, I really stink at it. So I assume if I stink at it, then other people mm-hmm. must struggle with it too. Which is probably a faulty assumption. But I guess the whole point of this is, you know, we have to, when you're trying to change your behavior or your child's behavior, either one, you really have to do it one day at a time. You have to do it one instance at a time. You have to do it one, sometimes almost 1 minute at a time to see, is it getting better or is it getting worse? Mm. And I think this is something that goes completely against our culture today. I mean, I see so many people, and I'm not trying to make anybody, you know, upset about, you know, medication or anything, but I see so many people expecting, you know, like medication to be a magic fix for every problem. And it's not. I mean, it's just really not. And I see this a lot, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't use medication, so don't go, you know, don't go there. I'm not saying that, oh, well, my kid, it's not a statement about that, but I've talked to plenty of parents and I've talked to plenty of teachers who think that that is going to fix everything. And that is really kind of the high speed internet solution to trying to deal with the problem behavior. And oftentimes what it does is it really doesn't necessarily decrease it to the degree that we often think that it might when you actually look at the changes in behavior. And so,
would it be fair to say maybe there are times in some circumstances where medication can at least bring it to a point where you can then deal with the behavior through behavior, you know, modifications and, you know, basic behavior principles, but that there's no and there's no substitute for the behavior related issues.
Right. And you know, even the research suggests that, you know, that medication works, but medication in conjunction with behavioral principles works even better.
Right.
So, if you can, you know, it's one of these things, I can give you $5, I can give you $500. I mean, you know, you do a little extra work. And so, again, this is not a knock on parents who put their kids on medication or anything like that. It's not a judgment against that. It's just the fact that it really, a lot of times it doesn't always solve the problem. fully. Because you still have behavioral problems, and that's why stepping back and looking at how are things going almost on a day-to-day basis, and really looking at it from that standpoint. And that's a hard thing to do for me. It's a hard thing to do for other people as well, because we want the behavior to be better. Like, for instance, I had a kid I was working with in a school a couple of years ago who, he was cursing like 50, 60 times a day at the teachers and stuff. And so we began to slowly work on things. He only cursed 20 times in a day. And they're like, oh, Steve's doing it. And I thought, okay, well, we just reduced it by, by 50% in 2 days. We went from on average like 50 times a day to like 20 times, so over 50% improvement. It wasn't fixed, but it was better. And I think that's kind of where you have to get into the, reevaluating every day. Is today better than yesterday or not? Mm. Because it is one day at a time.
And maybe sometimes even you have to look at it in terms of, because sometimes you may have 3 steps forward and 2 steps back. Is there a pattern maybe of moving toward better? We're going to have to go to break. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm here with my good friend, Dr. Alan Alday. If you've got a question or a comment, 573-4-BREAD-4, you can call or text. You don't have to go on the air. You can keep it anonymous if you want. We'll be back in just a minute here on Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Here with my good friend, Dr. Alan Alday, in the studio. Alan, it's so nice to have you in here because my guests are usually by phone, and so I'm here in this little, I feel like Bubble Boy, I'm here in the hermetically sealed bubble with Alex over there staying away from my germs. We don't even have an arm sleeve where I can play Trivial Pursuit with him or anything. So it's good to have somebody here.
It's my pleasure to be here. So
I do have to ask you as well. I mean, I know you are an Auburn alum. Mm-hmm. Did you take any perverse pleasure in Clemson's win over the Crimson Tide?
It surprised me, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect. I mean, it's hard to deny what Saban has done. However, I must say that Kerry's cousin graduated from high school with Dabo Swinney.
Oh, really?
Who is from Alabama. So she's, so Alabama's still kind of won. The state of Alabama's still kind of won. But my mom came up yesterday. She lives just south of Tuscaloosa, and she came up yesterday to be with us for the baby, and I said, well, it'll be a national day of mourning in Alabama, so the roads will be very clear. You'll be able to just move right up.
She made the trip up from Demopolis.
She did. She did. Right by herself. I was really impressed with her. But she...
Clemson, if you think about it, it just occurred to me yesterday, both their national championships, because I'm old enough to remember their first one.
Yeah, 81, right?
Yeah, they were both coached by Alabama alums, Danny Ford and then Dabo Swinney. So.
Well, I think when you look at what Clemson did and who all they beat throughout the year, I mean, they did a really impressive.
Yes.
And I had to say as an Auburn graduate, I used to work at Oklahoma State, and it was very hard to swallow losing to Oklahoma. So, but I'm not surprised. I figured they would beat Auburn way worse than what they actually did. But it is. So, it's not to. I'm not surprised. But I just look. I feel bad for Clemson next year whenever it's Clemson Alabama Part 3, because Saban doesn't like to lose more than once. So
yeah, we'll see how Clemson does post Deshaun Watson. That'll be a big question. So back to this one day at a time. I was thinking about this. You were talking about how we really have to. I hear a couple things from you. One is kind of we have to take the long view, but be attentive every day. But take the long view of where we're going. It seems to me. I mean, if we want to translate this too into a Catholic terminology that the virtue of fortitude, which, you know, that willingness to, because I'll tell you, and you'll discover this, especially I think as you get a little bit older as parents, you know, I think we were 39 when our youngest child was born. It's easy sometimes to kind of lose your fire for seeing things through as a parent.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, usually the youngest child ends up running wild, you know, and that, so you really need that virtue of fortitude.
Well, you do. And I think that is one of the things that, that is kind of the hallmark of a behavior analytic approach is, you know, you have to follow through and you have to see it to completion.
Consistency, I guess.
And that's a hard, that is one of the hardest things to do. And, you know, and I think is, so I guess as you think about this, is how do I do this kind of one day at a time? I mean, the most practical suggestion I could come up with for parents would be identify one behavior that you really want to change and only work on that and kind of evaluate it every day. Because if you try to change everything, like, you know, I'm going to work on him being respectful and work on this and work. I mean, if you pick five things, you're guaranteed to fail because we can't keep up with it all. And so what I suggest to people, and especially, you know, I suggest this to teachers, is let's pick one thing and even to the point of let's pick the hardest time of the day. You know, so if you know that dinner time is the hardest time of the day, just work on it during dinner because, as we've talked about before on here, truly the hardest behavior to change is your own. None of us, you know, I just lost the lady's name that said this, but one of my favorite sayings is, you know, we judge others by their behavior, but ourselves by our intentions, you know, and so our behavior is actually the hardest to change. So if you can really get much more focused from this broad, I need my kid to be good, which is real broad, to I need my kid to sit at the table during dinner and just work on just that. And then you evaluate it every day. Then you begin to see success because, you know, even as adults, we're not that much different from kids. Is if we're successful, we're going to keep doing something. If we fail, we're going to quit doing it. And that's just kind of the way we all are. So if you can see success truly one day at a time, then, you know, it does increase your fortitude to make you want to keep going. And then once you kind of get that behavior under control, then you work on another. I mean, I think of kids I've worked with before, and truly we started with staying in your seat. You know, he was still having a lot. I wasn't worried about doing work. Let's just stay in our seat first because you have to be in our seat to do work. So I stay there. And then we worked on, you know, doing work. Then we worked on another thing. Then, you know, we worked on one behavior at a time because I needed the teachers to see success with that, not, you know, not so much just the kid, because if the teachers see success, then they're going to be more likely to keep going. And so you look at it each day. And I think that is, you know, and the sweet Jesus part is also important because, you know, I know for me, I have to pray often as to Lord, help me to, to know what to do to change these behaviors. And I do think that is just as important of a part of it too, is to, you know, to pray, to ask what behaviors do I need to work on first, and then from there, you know, just follow what you feel the Lord leading you to do. And I think that is something that, again, we all try to do. And I'm the same way. I'm changing. I'm working on a behavior. You know, I'm working on some of my own behaviors, and I do it. You know, I get up in the morning. And I say, okay, I'm gonna try to do this today. And if I fail, I don't feel like I'm a failure. I just am going to work on it today and see how I did. And then tonight I'll evaluate, how did I do? And if I didn't do well, I'll see, okay, well, wonder why that happened. And tomorrow morning I'll get up and I'll start over. And that's a hard, it took me a while to get to that point. I mean, it took me, let's just say I've been doing this for almost 20 years now. And only in the last couple of years did I really kind of get there. As a you know, individual.
Two parallels for whatever reason come to my mind. One is weight loss and the other is farming, right? So weight loss, which I'm pretty good at losing weight. I'm not always great at keeping it off, right? So, but what I've found is the hardest time in weight loss are those first few weeks before you notice any results.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're doing it, but you don't notice your pants any looser. You know, you're not noticing much difference on the scales. Nobody's seeing any difference in you and so forth. But when you finally then start to see the results, maybe a comment from someone or, wow, I'm not straining to buckle this belt anymore, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, seeing that fruit gives you more motivation. Same kind of with farming. You know, you plant the seed, you tend it, you care for it. It's going to take a while before it breaks the surface. But in both situations, you are applying principles. As we've said, human nature doesn't really change. So we're applying principles that we know in time will bear fruit if we will just, you know, as I think St. Paul says, we will not grow weary and lose heart.
All right. And that's a hard, I think it is easier to do when it's something like, you know, a seed. But when it's your child or yourself,
right,
it does harder because, you know, I'm hungry. And look at my belt. I'm still on the last. I had to get an awl and make a new hole in my belt so I can wear it, you know. But you're right. I mean, and it does come back to the fortitude. And that's what I try to.
Fortunately, though, with behavior, probably we see the results a little faster, I would imagine.
I mean, one of the things, this is not a hard and fast rule or anything, and I can't back this up with research, just experience, is I've noticed usually I can see a difference. If you're consistent at doing whatever it is you're doing, whatever the intervention may be, if you're consistent at that for 10 days, usually you can see somewhat of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be at zero. You know, if it's a problem behavior that happens 100 times a day, it doesn't mean you're going to be at zero, but you should see a noticeable difference. And, you know, or if it's something they never do, you should see them actually doing it some, you know. I mean, being from the deep South, I mean, we're yes, ma'am and no, ma'am, you know, that's our thing. And I know the other day I had took Noah up to work with me for a minute to do. I had to run up there to do something, and I say, yes, you know, he says, yes. I say, yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. You know, so I'm always reminding him. And one time, just once, somebody asked him something, he said, yes, ma'am. And I thought, oh, thank you. So, I mean, it probably took me 1,000 reminders to get him to say that once, but that was just enough of a nugget for me to say, okay, we're on the right track, you know. And I know some people are like, that doesn't, but that's important to me. That's a behavior that I want to see more of. And so, you know, you just have to look for those little victories and truly take it and look, make decisions every day. So if you see, you know, your kid being successful and it was just one day out of five, that's one day. And that's one nugget to hold on to unless, you know, let's keep trying because, you know, it does take fortitude, which is, you know, which I guess goes back to the to the sweet Jesus part. You know, we that is a gift of the Spirit. So,
well, Alan, it's always a pleasure to have you. We're about out of time. You'll be in our prayers for a Friday for the arrival of little Luke Raphael.
And thank you.
Entrust him to the prayers of the Immaculate Heart of Mary and all the saints and our Lord who says, let the little children come to be. Blessings to you and your family.
And to yours too, Mike. Thanks.
All right. We'll be back with a new hour. Talk about this whole Dylan Roof issue. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.